My name is Kelvin Holly, and we are in historic Muscle Shoals Sound, what used to be the second incarnation of Muscle Shoals Sound when they moved from Jackson Highway to here around 77. And before that, this building was a naval reserve. And they used to have dances in here. This was all part of a gymnasium at one point.
Wow.
This, Studio A and Studio B were like, so this is basically a building within a building. Double cinder block walls filled with sand. And they had a professional studio designer at the time come in and design the studios, you know. So, yeah, they built two studios in here. And then they moved from Jackson Highway. And then, I mean, Bob Seger, Bob Dylan. I mean, the list goes on and on. Melissa Etheridge. Just tons of people have recorded in here, you know. So
that's awesome.
First session I ever did was with he's deceased now, but the famous blues, rhythm and blues singer, Bobby Blue Bland. That was the first session I ever did in here. And over the years, I've done, I don't know, a lot, you know. I can remember when you could still smoke in here and the room would just be filled with smoke and ashtrays and everybody'd be lined up, you know, getting ready to play. And
so were you living here then?
I had just moved here. I just had gone through a divorce and I was actually living in Athens at the time and playing with a band called the Decoys. We were real popular around the area, but we used to play a place called Union Station every Tuesday night, and we had a big following and a lot of fun. And I just started kind of hanging out here a lot, you know.
This building?
No, just in the not at the time, but I mean, I grew up when I was listening to music. Some of my favorite records, you know, back in the day, you get a record, you always look on there to see who was playing on it, where it was recorded. And I'd always see the Swampers names on a lot of them. Didn't know them personally. But I kind of started playing here years and years later, and I got to meet them. You know, in fact, I met Jimmy Johnson at the club I was playing at. He came up to me on a break and introduced himself and said, "Would you like to play on a session tomorrow?" You know, I said, "Sure." You know, and
that's awesome.
Brought my stuff down, and that was it.
You know? Was that the Jackson Road?
No, it was here.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was here. They'd already moved here by that time, so.
So tell me your, like, origin story for, like, how you became a musician and, like, where you grew up and what got you into music and
My dad was Air Force, so gotcha. We moved around quite a bit, but for maybe the first 11 years of my life, we were in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, which they had a big Air Force base there at the time. But it started with me from seeing the Beatles on the Ed Sullivan Show, which probably 90% of musicians my age will say that. So we saw them on the Ed Sullivan Show, and the next day at school, you know, everybody was talking about it, you know, and everybody's like, start a band.
Nice.
You know, so.
So how old would you have been at that point?
I was probably 10 or 11.
Nice.
And, I already had a guitar, not an electric guitar, but I knew a couple of little chords somebody had showed me, but I started getting kind of into it, you know, and then me and some buddies, my parents would let us jam in the garage, or my buddies' parents would let us jam in the garage, and we'd get together on weekends. We just had a lot of fun. I was hooked. I mean, it's like I immediately knew what I was going to do, you know, music.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So who else were kind of influences on you at that time?
Like, well, at that time, you're talking the 60s. So everything was fresh. A lot of stuff hadn't been invented yet, you know. So, but for me, a lot of the British bands, you know, I didn't know anything about the blues or American history, music history. But a lot of the young British bands at the time were playing old American blues songs and kind of turning it into their own thing. So, you know, you're talking you know, Jimi Hendrix, of course, Beach Boys, on and on and on. There were just, it just seemed like there was just an influx of so many different bands, you know, Led Zeppelin, Cream, Eric Clapton. I mean, the list is endless, you know. So really what they were doing was turning us on to our own music that had already been here, you know. So
that's crazy. So when did you start seeing the, like, the Swampers and the Muscle Shoals stuff? Like, you had mentioned that you started seeing those on the back records.
Well, I mean, you know, probably in the late 60s, I can remember looking at a... First time I really became aware of, I guess, Muscle Shoals, I can't remember the name of the magazine, but there was a magazine at the time, I think it was called Hit Parader, or... I don't remember, but there was a picture in there of Duane Allman. Playing with Wilson Pickett at Fame. And they were just kind of talking about him, you know, a little bit. So that was my first taste, where I first saw the name Muscle Shoals, Alabama on there, you know. And then as years went on, there were different albums that were coming out of here. And then I got really into the Allman Brothers Band around 69, 70. At the time, I was living in Munich, Germany. I mean, I lived my whole, almost my entire teenage years overseas. We lived in Turkey. And my dad went to Vietnam for a year. And we lived in Munich, Germany for a year. Because my mom is German. She's from Munich. So we just lived there for the year he was gone. And that's when I really got into music. You know, I met some like-minded friends, and you know, it was like school. We didn't care about school. All we wanted to do was play, you know. So wow. I really got into it.
So how old were you when you were in Germany?
You know, I was 16 17, and then we got stationed to Montgomery, Alabama. That's how I ended up in Alabama.
Wow.
This is 1970 71. Didn't know anybody. All the civil rights stuff is going on. They're zoning schools, you know, desegregating or whatever. And so, but yeah, I mean, I met some friends, and I just graduated high school, and I joined at that time the most popular band in Montgomery. So that was my first taste of, like, professional, even though it was just a...
What were they called?
Sawdust.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, I mean, they had a van, and then we traveled around. We played bars and fraternity parties and just wherever we could play, you know.
Cool.
And I've been doing it ever since.
Wow. You know? So how'd you get to Muscle Shoals exactly? You said you were living in Athens.
I was living in Athens. Sometime around the mid-'80s, I got just totally burnt on traveling, and I just got burnt out. And my wife at the time, her dad owned a string of pharmacies in the area. He was a pharmacist by trade, you know, but he, you know, he did well for himself. So he offered me a job at one of his pharmacies in Athens. And so we packed up. I was living in Memphis, you know, so I packed up, we packed up, moved to Athens, and I quit playing for about a year, went back to school. Had a son. And then, you know, late to early 90s, we split up, unfortunately. And, you know, that's never an easy thing to deal with. But I joined the band The Decoys, who was founded by Johnny Sandlin, who was a record producer. Johnny produced the Allman Brothers, Widespread Panic, God, just too many to name. He was in Macon, Georgia, and he was originally from Decatur, Alabama. He moved back to Decatur and opened a studio, so I was working a lot for him.
Is that at Duct Tape?
Duct Tape.
Yeah.
Played on a lot of stuff in the early 90s that he did. Got to know all the bands that were coming in and out, Widespread Panic and Colonel Bruce Hampton, and I don't know. A lot of the Athens, Georgia bands at the time were coming to Johnny, you know.
Nice.
And then we started, it was Johnny's band, The Decoys. He started it, and we started playing over here.
I didn't know that. I didn't know he started The Decoys.
Yeah, it was him, man. His nickname, Dwayne Allman gave him, was The Duck. John the Duck. Because he was kind of big. He kind of waddled a little bit. And Dwayne nicknamed him The Duck. So that kind of stuck. So then you have Duct Tape Music, and uh-huh. you have The Decoys,
right?
Which their logo was like a duck.
Uh-huh.
So that's where all that came from, was from Johnny.
That's know? Cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you end up with Richard?
Well, you know, 90% of getting gigs in this business is who you know, who you're hanging out with. And at that time, early 90s, 93, 94, I'd befriended several guys here in town that were in his band. Travis Womack being one of them, Wayne Chaney, Chalmers Davis. Anyway, I get a call one day from Wayne, and he says, you know, Richard really wants another guitar player. He wants two guitar players. And I said, okay. And he said, I put the bug in his ear about you. You know, so you might get a call, you might not, I don't know, you know. So, this one, you know, about a week later, I get a call, and it's him, you know. And he said, can you get on a plane in the morning, fly to Los Angeles and meet me, you know. And I said, yeah. So I got up the next morning, flew to L.A., met with him for an hour in his hotel room. You know, it's bigger than life. Rock and roll legend. I mean, he's one of the original guys, you know, mm-hmm. that started all this mess, you know. I mean, the Beatles idolized him, the Stones. Jimi Hendrix was even in his band at one point, you know. And so he just asked me a few questions. We got along, and he had a show that night, said he wanted me to play. So we went. Played a show with the Temptations and somebody else, I can't remember, but never had a rehearsal with him. And anyway, that was it. I stayed with him almost 20 years until wow. he couldn't perform anymore, you know. But, I mean, he
was performing up until a few years ago?
Yeah, I think around 2014 or 15, he had to quit. You know, he couldn't walk anymore. He just made 87 years old, you know, so he did it as long as he could. Chuck Berry did it almost all the way up to 90, you know. I mean, you look at Willie Nelson. But guys like that, man, they live to perform, you know. They love getting out there and doing their thing, man, you know. So.
I love all those guys, all their music. So what was he like on a personal level?
Well, I don't know how much you saw him on TV or anything like that, but he was pretty much the way you saw him. He was real. First of all, he was a great guy. You know, I have to say he was a really generous, caring, loving human being. But he was Little Richard, so he kind of had this attitude, you know. And we became good friends. You know, we still talk on the phone a lot, you know. And he was slowing down a lot, and then one day out of the blue, I get a call from Spooner Oldham's wife, Karen, and she said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, I'm not doing much right now. She said, well, can you get on a plane in the morning? I said, yeah. She said that Neil Young's wife, Peggy, has a band, and Spooner's in her band, and their guitar player had a meltdown at rehearsal and quit, and they're rehearsing for a tour. So I flew out to Neil Young's ranch and got that gig, you know, and spent 8 years in her band, you know. Played with Neil some, and Neil would come play with us, actually. Whenever he had some downtime, he would come play in the band and got to know him. And Peggy just died January 1st of this year of cancer. So everybody in my circle that I've played music with for the past 30 years have passed away just within a year and a half, you know.
Damn.
So it's kind of been kind of strange, man.
I would imagine that would be.
I mean, not
strange.
Only that. I mean, they were really good friends, you know. So yeah. it's just like, wow, life really a punch in the gut, you know.
Yeah.
But it, you know, I mean, it comes with the age bracket. You know, people get sick and they go on. You know, so it's the way it is.
So, what do you think your place is in the story of the local music thing? That,
well, I mean, I'm just proud that I was able to contribute what I was able to contribute to the scene or whatever, you know. I love doing session work. I like playing on people's records and creating. It's like when you take pictures or somebody paints a picture, they're creating something, you know. And music is the same way. It's just an invisible palette, and you're putting colors to, you know. And I'm thankful that I was able to contribute to that. But my, you know, my number one thing has always been to play in a band.
Yeah.
I like the camaraderie. I like the spontaneity. It's like, you know, playing every Tuesday down at Flobama. I look at it as therapy for me. You know, it's music therapy is exactly what it is, you know. It
makes and that's me, fathers and sons?
Yeah. I mean, that came from, you know, me and Will would do sessions or we'd be on gigs together. And I just mentioned one day, I said, man, we ought to get a little band together and try to find a place to play one day a week, you know, so.
So do you get a lot out of that? Do you get a lot out of that?
Yeah, I get a lot out of it.
That's cool.
Yeah. We don't take it serious or nothing. I mean, we take it serious when we're playing, but as far as a band as a whole, it's more of just a fun thing. It's not like, hey, let's go on the road and get a record deal and be big stars. That's not what we're doing. So
let me ask you one more thing, and we'll take a few pictures and get out of here.
Right on.
So I guess a lot of the legacy of our area, like Muscle Shoals or whatever, is largely a recording legacy, I guess.
Yeah. To me, this area, even though there is, it's not never really been a live music town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, I've traveled all over the world many, many times, you know, people in Europe or Scandinavia or Japan or Australia, they know more about the music heritage of this area than the people that live here. If that makes sense. I mean, they're just music people. They do their research. It's not just like, let's pop up the latest hit on your iPhone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they really dive into it, you know. Who played on it? Who wrote that song? Where was it recorded? You know, they want to know about the song.
That's,
you know,
wild.
We went over there with Donnie Fritz to Japan, and we were just blown away. I mean, after every gig, I mean, there was a line of people at the door for autographs and signed records that we'd all played on, you know. So
where do you think, like, where do you think it's going for maybe, like, some of the younger dudes around here? Like,
man,
do you
I
think,
can't say.
Do you think people
I tell them, I said, man, it's all a crapshoot.
Yep.
I mean, it's what it is. I mean, back in the early 60s when all of this happened, I mean, it was just luck. Somebody hit triple sevens with a song.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, it could have been in anywhere. Could have been Pulaski, Tennessee, or wherever. You know, somebody had a vision. You know, there were some people before Rick Hall, but Rick Hall, I always have to say that he was kind of the guy that really had the drive to do it, you know. And so he got lucky with a hit song, and it just he kept trying to keep it going, you know, and that's exactly what happened, you know.
Cool.
And so that's kind of, it's like the Swampers. And there's a lot of behind-the-scenes people that made all of this happen. Jerry Wexler was a producer from Atlantic Records. If it hadn't have been for him, there may have not been all this. A Muscle Shoals Sound, because he's the one that convinced the Swampers to leave Rick Hall and open up their own place. And they were like, you know what, we could probably do this. Let's. And they got the Casket Factory there on Jackson Highway.
The Casket, I love that. The Casket Factory.
Well, that's what it was.
Yeah. Cool, man. That's all. Is there anything else you want to add to that? That's some cool stuff.
No, I mean, that's pretty much it in a nutshell.
Thanks for chatting with me, man. Yeah, man. I love
everybody's hearing, got a story, man.
Yeah, man. I love hearing everybody's take on those things, and everybody's different. And I love hearing your story. There's some stuff in there that I didn't know about you.
I mean, there's some great young talent now. I mean, there's, of course, you know, generations come up. Now you got third generation. You know, the 20 somethings, and then you got the 40 something guys, and the, you know, the 60 and 70 year old guys are still doing it, you know.
So. Very much so.
So I'm thankful, you know.
Yeah. Well, cool. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah, man. Yeah.